Again, I just want to go over how great it's been, starting with OLCC reaching out. I have a personal connection in Southern Oregon with the chairman of OLCC, Rob Patridge, who's a great guy and a businessman in Oregon, understands business, and came from this from a business standpoint. Even medical marijuana is a business. We've made it a business, and my business is taking care of sick people and empowering sick people to take care of themselves. And so, you know, in that, we've got this merging of what I have known for years. When I was approached by Anthony Johnson to push Measure 91, my initial response was this would be the end of medical. It was not something I was going to put money into and not going to support publicly. And it took a lot of conversations. Anthony Johnson and I worked in the 90s with Voter Power, the organization that put OMA on the ballot and got it passed. And so we grew up in this industry kind of together, learning from the forefathers of the industry and moving into, you know, what we're doing now as what we feel are activists. And as I said to the legislature recently, we were criminals a couple years ago, and now we're consultants, which is cool, right? So one thing I want to recognize, and I kind of have to breathe every day and remind everybody to take a breath. And my message always at these conferences and any event where I get to talk to people that are coming into the industry that haven't been here, or maybe some of you have just been in on the medical level, obviously, and working towards that, slow down. My message is slow down, because I see so much money being wasted before we're even finished making the rules. We don't even know what the land use things are panning out. They're changing county by county. We're fighting county by county to prevent a ban on something the Oregon voters decided they want legal. So now we're having to go back and convince counties that we need to, you know, allow these dispensaries to open and these growers to provide. And so it's a nonstop fight. 20 years of my life, I can tell you it's been the pleasure of my life to work with people in the marijuana industry and a lot of you good folks here today. So let's talk about the people that we have here. You already met Steve Marks. So Amanda Borup is a policy analyst at OLCC and someone that we've worked with closely on the Rules Advisory Committee. Will Higlin is the Senior Director of Licensing and Compliance. Jamie Dickinson is the person that is tasked with dealing with all the packaging and labeling. And you can imagine some of you that are in the industry know how difficult that's been, and the rules are very confusing. So she's going to try and bring us up to speed on that. Nathan Ricks is the senior IP policy analyst. So Nathan does all the technical mumbo jumbo that we're going to rely on so much when these programs are up and running. And we also have Scott Denholm here from Metrics, which is the tracking system we're going to be using in Oregon. So we are all going to have to know this guy and what he's up to. And so we were glad to have him. He made it for us today so we can kind of get up to speed on what we're going to have to do tracking wise. And also, I want to remind you that these folks do have two tables out in the booth area. So when we get done here and when you get, you know, on your lunch break or whenever, they're going to stick around today and answer some questions. So this is your chance to kind of hit the regulatory body that you're going to be dealing with. So it's exciting to come up, and we ask you to be respectful, and if you have concerns, they definitely will listen to them, and they'll do something about it. They've done it with us, and we've been able to really make it all work. So we're going to pick on Will a little bit, and we're going to talk about, now Will, grab a mic here, and you just kind of clue in. I'm gonna do this a little differently, where I just kind of work with them, ask some questions, and get them talking about it, because I get this panel thing where it's just like robotic in the middle all the time, and you just kind of tune out. So what I want to do is mix it up a little bit, have a conversation, which we do all the time. We, after RAC meetings, often we'll sit and just kind of go over how it looks, and they're constantly asking, what do we think? What do we think? And it's so refreshing to have a state body ask the experts about marijuana how to do this and how to move forward. So, all right, Will, I think some of the questions people are wondering is, what areas of rec regulation does the OLCC have oversight on? And what other state agencies are involved that you're working with? And how do you coordinate with those folks to make all this go smooth?
You might have to repeat the second one. I'll start with the first one.
Sure.
I'm reminded of a song when I showed up today about what a long, strange trip it's been. It really has in the last year or so that I've been in this position. But as far as the way the laws are written, you know, we're responsible for licensing the labs, the producers, the processors, the wholesalers, the retailers, and research certificates. So that kind of gives you the framework of where our regulatory responsibility lies. We don't have anything to do with personal use, the four plants, any of those things. We really just regulate within the license types that were given direction to us through the statutes that were passed. In relation to that, Steve mentioned that we're going to issue our first producer licenses next week, so we're really excited about that. But you know, Steve talked about a little bit of apprehension and kind of where we are right now, and so I wanted to take this opportunity to really talk about where we are. You know, we've had roughly, 800-900 licenses in the system. We made a policy decision at the very beginning to focus on the producers first because we needed to get product in the ground, so to speak, so we could move through the cycle. And so we've taken that to focus on the outdoor producers. And it's been bumpy, I think, on both sides. We've been real open and transparent. We've done a lot of meetings down in Southern Oregon to look at, you know, what does compliance really look like? Because we don't know going in. So we've tried to build compliance together underneath the framework that was given to us by our statutes and our rules. And that part's gone well, but it's been bumpy's the wrong word. The conversations have been good, but it slowed the process down. And so I think the waivers that we put into effect with our rules was absolutely the right policy decision to make. But as waivers come in, it slows the process down for all of us. And we've got a lot of waivers. I don't know what the exact number is, but just to give you an idea, we probably have about 275 outdoor grow applications. I would guess that over 50% of them have asked for waivers. Those are places where we need to go out and inspect and pretty much negotiate what that might or might not look like. And so my message to you is keep up the good work. When applications come in, the better job you can do really understanding the responsibilities and the checklists and everything we'll probably talk about today, the better for processing for all of us. It helps us out, and it actually helps you out as far as getting the process complete. And then what we'll begin to do now is after we begin to actually issue the outdoor grows, we'll systematically then move on to the processors. So that's coming up next. I can't tell you when, but I'll commit to you that the OLCC is putting every single resource possible to process these licenses in the most efficient way we can. We've taken alcohol resources from the investigative side and trained them up on marijuana because we just didn't have the resources just within the marijuana division to really stay up with the demand. So we've moved resources into marijuana. We've decentralized around the state, I think, as you know, so you can build relationships with actually your inspectors in those regions. And keep the faith. I think we're doing a great job. It's going to begin next Friday. And as Steve mentioned, the commission will meet weekly to keep approving licenses as we go through this process. I do remember the second question. What are we doing with other state agencies?
Okay, so, and I know, Nathan, you might want to add to that a little bit as far as what regulation OLCC has and what you have oversight on. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, and I think Will was about to just go there. I didn't want to step on his toes. But so we're working closely with the Department of Agriculture and also the Department of Revenue and Health Authority in several different ways. But I wanted to give some credit also to the legislature for setting up our coordination with those other agencies. I had the opportunity to go to Sacramento to talk about how their new regulatory structure is being set up on the medical side, and also how they're starting to conceive how recreational marijuana may roll out in the future. And right now they have 7 different agencies involved. So I think the legislators set us up for success by keeping it small. And we'll be working with the Department of Agriculture on how pesticides will be coordinated. They have a nice pesticide list. Also the Health Authority on packaging and labeling, which Jamie will talk more about, and the Department of Revenue specifically on tax collection. One additional thing which we've done, which really goes beyond our direct coordination, is we put together a business readiness guidebook. And we realized that there are a lot of things that you'll have to do to be successful in our process for getting a license. But then there are other things that fall outside of our licensure process, like getting a permit for a commercial kitchen if you're a processor, or making sure you have your building code permit with local government. And so we tried to compile all of those in a document not supposed to be an encyclopedia, but really a checklist of things that go beyond our authority, but a place where you could go to at least start having a conversation at the local level or with other state agencies. And we've got a copy of that at our booth if you want to come and see us afterwards. But that represents about 14 different state agencies and a bunch of different local governments. So the coordination goes beyond those three to those secondary groups.
Why I got you going, Nathan, I wanted to ask you, where do you think changes are going to go in the future based off of the 2016 legislative changes, which I think a lot of people know have been intense, and the 91 committee group of legislators that have been doing the oversight on this stuff? We got to give them a lot of credit for the amount of time they had in the short session to make so much headway. Not everything worked out how we wanted. There's a lot of stuff with the opt-in to the gardens for medical growers that didn't come out quite right. But I think what's good is the legislators know what mistakes they made. I think we know that we got to go back and fix some things. So in February, we're going to be working on that and kind of correct some of the stuff. And I think the power that OLCC has over certain things lets them kind of change it as we go. So as we're developing and as we find new techniques in farming and new techniques in retails and want to move into, drive-through marijuana stores and, things that we think are feasible that we brought up in this rulemaking process. So I think based off of those changes, Nathan, what do you think is going to happen? What can we tell people that's going to happen in the next, couple years that you see how this is going to evolve?
Well, right before I walked up on here, I came straight from a conversation with an engineer, a gentleman that works with different fencing companies and works with outdoor growers. And he was expressing some concern about some local land use planners that he was working with. And we traded business cards. We talked about follow-up, some areas that he might want to improve in our business readiness guide, and talked about some ways that he might be able to work better with local government. And that's just one small example of the role that the OLCC can play in convening various stakeholders. And Director Marks and Will have talked about how we've been able to engage stakeholders in the past through our rules advisory process that Amanda managed, and we brought 14 different subcommittees together through that, over 100 different people. Many of you, I see out in the audience, participated in that. And I think we can continue in that process. And as an executive branch agency, right, we can bring the results of that to the legislature to inform their policymaking process and say, here's what we've heard, and then they can help make those legislative fixes.
Great. Amanda, you got something to add to that?
Yeah, I just wanted to add quickly kind of about the new legislation. So right now, I'm sure you're all aware that we have a temporary rule, and that temporary rule is making its way to be a permanent rule, which will happen the end of June. We actually have public comment on that on May 25th, and then we'll be accepting written comment for the next 2 weeks after that. But the 2016 legislative changes haven't been added into the temporary rule. So what's probably going to happen is once the temporary rule becomes permanent, we'll come out with a new temporary rule that will go ahead and include all of those changes. So we're going to try to keep it as fluid as possible, and we'll keep everything posted on our website so everybody's aware of what they need to be reading and what regulations they need to be following.
Great. So I know, Nathan, this is kind of directed at you and Scott. So I know tracking is on everybody's mind. So why don't you lead off a little bit about how OLCC is going to be interacting with metrics, and then maybe Scott can explain kind of how metrics function works and give us a little bit of info about how we're going to be dealing with them as industry folks.
Well, the beginning of tracking really has to do back with our compliance philosophy, which if you've been to any of our public meetings and you've heard Will talk about OLCC not being the big bad wolf, it starts there. It starts well before tracking, and the fact that our compliance philosophy is that technology isn't a silver bullet, right? That compliance means security and a dialogue with inspectors, and tracking all go hand in hand. It's really a triangle. And technology is just one piece of that. It's part of it's a wheel on a tricycle, if you'll allow me to use another metaphor. And we went through an open and competitive process last year. Metric was the superior choice according to our open process. And particularly in terms of training. And I see some of you out there too that have been through our training process. We've, I think to date, trained over 150 or maybe closer to 200.
Close to 400 now.
Close to 400 so far of industry people that are on their way to being licensees through Metric. And the idea, of course, is that we'll want to tag plants and be able to have traceability all the way to the point of sale. As a part of our compliance philosophy, we want to be able to have that traceability to prevent diversion, prevent inversion, provide public health and public safety data so that if we have to do a product recall, we can trace product all the way back to its point of origin, to that original harvest batch or to that processing batch. And the point of our security rules is so that that can align with the with that traceability, so that if we see something or get a notification on the regulatory side, we can pull the tapes and we can say, well, tell us more about why product was, we think product might have been diverted at this particular point, or you can have a conversation with an inspector at that time. So we believe that's necessary at this point. Really, that goes back to the Cole memo. We've talked about that time and time again in order to prevent federal prosecution, since the marijuana is still federally prohibited, Schedule I substance. And so far, Colorado and Washington, which have pursued accountable systems like a tracking system, haven't been prosecuted yet. I mentioned I had gone out to California to talk to them about traceability and this philosophy, right, of having security rules, having traceability, and having the human element of compliance for their medical system. And they also seem to be on that track as well to prevent a lot of the federal raids that have gone on the county level with their medical program. So that's really the high level, and we'd be happy to go into any more detail, but I think...
No, I appreciate it, yeah. So, and I want to say, too, with the tracking stuff, OLCC, again, reached out to us, came down, brought people to the farms. The waivers we're talking about was something where we took the OLCC around and some media folks, and you can imagine some of my growers were not super excited when they saw three different media vehicles pulling down their driveway. But they were willing to do that because they realized how important it is for us as industry people to be involved with the regulatory process. I want to give a quick shout out to Senator Floyd Prezansky, who's here. Let's give him a quick round of applause. Thanks for showing up, Floyd, for sure. Floyd and several on the 91 committee have been great in their response to us and their reaction to things that we know aren't going to work, and their openness to let us, kind of fill them in on that, which, as you know, is so important. In many industries, we see how there's a disconnect between regulatory agencies and the folks that are actually on the ground. And if you haven't been on a marijuana grow site in Southern Oregon, you may not. I remember the first time we took Earl Blumenhauer, sorry, my medicine makes me forget a little bit. Earl Blumenhauer came down and we did the first congressional fundraiser in a marijuana garden in the United States history this last summer, the Family Cannabis Barbecue down in Southern Oregon, which was super exciting to see, and we will be inviting you all to that also. We're going to do a much bigger show, and we put some Christmas lights in the plants and had some folks there that have not seen what real marijuana plants look like versus the indoor devils. No, I'm just kidding. It's cool. We got energy to blow, right? So it was a lot of fun to have them kind of come down. And so in that, it opens the door for these folks to come in and bring their inspectors that are going to be working with us. And I can tell you these people are enthusiastic about working in a marijuana field in a state agency, and they've been very cool and coming out and asking questions and wanting to know what's up. So we really wanted to make it and let them introduce themselves to growers, and they're going to kind of, as they come out to these farms and to your buildings, they're going to come at a very cool kind of, friendly version of what we would expect out of a regulatory agency. So yeah, Will, please do.
So I just wanted to add a little bit to that because, we're pretty excited about this industry. We want this industry to be successful. And as we got into this, I think the legislature was very clear Frankly, there was a lot of people nervous about the OLCC being involved in this, rightfully so, because of some reputation, the alcohol, the police mentality. We don't have that mentality. We have the mentality that we want you to be successful, but we understand we're a regulatory agency at the same time. So I've always talked internally and even externally is, to me, we have regulatory frameworks, and that's kind of the sandbox we got to work within, but it's our job to be as creative as we can within that sandbox to say yes, not to say no. But at the same time, we need to hold ourselves accountable to that, and ultimately, you accountable to that. So we can't always say yes. We are a regulatory agency. We have to say no when it's outside the law. But we want to encourage. I think one of our responsibilities is to help get rid of the illegal market. The only way we can do that is to invite you in. If we're so regulatory focused, people are just going to frankly keep doing what they're doing, right? They're not going to want to have any part of that. Our job is to open that communication mechanism up so people feel more confident within the regulated system. The state obviously benefits from the tax revenue that will be generated for great programs, and hopefully the industry generates as well. So we are not the big bad wolf. We're not going to be hiding behind trees to try to bust you because you've done something wrong. But in the same token, if you sign up under our program and do things that are egregious, you know, all of a sudden 50 pounds of marijuana disappears, you will be held accountable for that, and I think everybody agreed you should be held accountable to that. The other side of that is if we come out and maybe you have a plant outside your canopy, I don't see us writing you up a violation. It's more about, hey, you know, this is something that's out of compliance right now. We need to get this back in order, and I'll be back in a month or so to check on you. So, you know, fix this, and we're all going to be cool. So that's really the relationship we want to have with you.
And real, Scott, you want to add to that real quick?
I'd just like to add one thing to that comment. And I know I've been working in this industry now for about 6 years and with regulatory bodies. And I can tell you that when regulation is done successfully, it really does help the industry a tremendous amount. I've been in Colorado working with the industry there for the last 6 years. And I can tell you, in that six-year period, in the last 2 years, actually, since recreational went live in Colorado, we started with 1,488 licensees in that state, and it's now up over 2,900. And the average price per gram is about $15 to $22. So regulation has not been a hurtful situation in Colorado. It's been actually very helpful to benefit the industry and making the industry profitable and allowing more businesses to grow. So I would just like to say that working with this team, I've seen them work with all of the regulations in all of the different states and have taken a tremendous amount of pride in the best practices that they've put forward. And I think this is going to be a model program. And just looking at the success that Colorado has had and looking at how much better Oregon is going to do this, you can look forward to a very good market here, and the regulation is actually going to do a tremendous amount to help.
Thanks. You know, along that, I think that, you know, and I actually would like to get what, how do you guys feel? You know, we've been working together for quite a while now, so I know you guys pretty well, and so I can constantly, and I can tell you in the beginning, I was skeptical, but knowing Rob Patridge and kind of getting into OLCC and getting a feel of how they wanted to do it and a feel that they realized it was a business. And Rob didn't see this as a law enforcement issue. And he is the Klamath County District Attorney, just in case some of you don't know that. He also serves over the OLCC. He was appointed by Governor Kitzhaber before he left office. And so obviously we're terrified, especially when somebody who has been putting people essentially over the years in jail and worked on drug task force as being the head of the agency that's going to handle our marijuana stuff. So I also was skeptical and obviously went in slow. And when he asked me to be involved and help him understand how this works, and I can tell you from point A to point B was he thought it would be a good idea to pull out a, you know, 8-pound plant, hang it by the roots, weigh it, and start deducting from there to keep track. So as any outdoor grower knows, that's probably not going to work too easy. We don't have those type of cattle scales laying around. So we've got them a lot where they really do understand, and they have come out, and you know, and I want to hear from you, because I don't hear this a lot. We don't talk about it, but how has it been helpful having the industry people involved, and anybody that wants to comment on this, please do. Because you've all been working with us now, we're curious, like, how has that helped? Obviously, we see the laws kind of going from what we work on in the legislature and things that we think are benefiting what we're doing and how we're moving forward, but it's always interesting to me to kind of get some feedback from the agency on, you know, what has the industry done to help you go through this process?
So I'll start. It's been a long, strange trip. But I can honestly say when I got into this, the industry was outstanding. I think we recognized that we did not know everything. We're regulators. We know how to regulate stuff, but we didn't know anything really about the industry and how it works, how plants are grown, you know, the whole process. So we reached out, and in most cases, and I say most cases, people want this to be successful, so they helped us. And it started the conversation back and forth where we could say, nah, that's not going to work, that's not quite right because of this. And we'd start a dialogue, and the dialogue was always professional. You look at the RAC process we went through that Nathan spoke about, all the people that have been involved from the industry. Nobody came with an agenda, at least it wasn't apparent. I'm sure behind the scenes there were some of that. But there was real professional discussions and give and takes about how to put these laws together. And frankly, I think that's why people recognize Oregon as kind of the leader in the marijuana policy.
I like the sound of that, don't you? Oregon is the leader.
Well, I say that because that's not because OLCC sat in a room and figured everything out. It's because the industry allowed us to have a conversation with each other to develop it together. So,
which if some of the other states would have done more of, I think we'd see a lot better systems. I think we've seen the destruction of medical in some of these other states. I don't like it when people refer to other states to tell me how we need to do it here in Oregon. I think we get what they're doing. I don't need anybody else to tell us what we're doing in Colorado or, you know, okay, we'll get it. And not everything's going to be right. We're going to have to fix things. And all of us are going to help make those changes. All of you are going to help make those changes. And if we don't get involved and we don't reach out to these folks, and I can tell you through this process, you'll be able to call OLCC and someone will answer the phone, unlike the Oregon Health Association. You know, I think we're going to get a lot more response from them. They want to get it right. They want to get it done quick. They know how fast things change for us. And so, and the tracking is part of that. And so, Scott, why don't you tell us a little bit about tracking? We're getting a little low on time, so I definitely want to go into that. Nathan?
Can I just add one more thing?
Sure.
So I just wanted to add one more thing to, you know, you ask why has it been so successful and how do we sort of feel about this? You know, one thing, so I'm a project person by training and with a background in business and economics. And the reason most projects fail is because people don't agree on the goal. And we said, you know, from the outset of the public engagement process, we may not all agree on, you know, the content at the end, but we all agree on the goal, which is we need to create regulations that work for everybody. And we need to make sure that we bring everyone, you know, that's in this room and everybody in the state that wants to participate in this market into a legal market, right? And we all agreed on that goal. And had we not all agreed on where we were going, I don't think we would have gotten to this place. And so, you know, I think the fact that we were all able to level set at the beginning was absolutely tremendous, and that's something a lot of public engagement, you know, communities don't get there, and a lot of state agencies don't do that, and a lot of industry people don't do that. And to have a conversation based on business and economics instead of primarily in the legal realm is tremendous. So I feel really good. I hope we can all continue in that vein.
Great. Okay, so I'm gonna skip you for a second, Scott, because I know you got kind of a little jaunt to go on. So, Amanda, I want to give you an opportunity. I know there's a couple things we've talked about that are most important. And Jamie, we definitely want to hear from you on packaging. I know a lot of people here are concerned with kind of how that's going and how the process. So, Jamie, why don't you start off by letting us know how the process is going, how the pre-approval process is looking at this point, so we can get our stuff quickly approved, and what do you see changing in the near future on that?
Sure. So, well, I'm sure many of you know, the OLCC started accepting packages on March 28th. In that time, we set that deadline originally because the Oregon Health Authority had a June 1st deadline for all medical registrants to have their packages and labels approved by that time. Since that time, the Oregon Health Authority has moved back the date to October 1st. So there's no longer a June 1st deadline to have all of your packages and labels pre-approved. It's a compliance date of October 1st. So with the impending rule changes that are going to be occurring, so as Amanda already discussed, since we're all operating under temporary rules right now, we know that the rules are going to change. And what we really don't want is people turning in applications that are going to be non-compliant as soon as the rules change. So what the OLCC is going to do is we're going to stop accepting packages tomorrow, and we're going to start accepting them again on August 1st. And what this is going to do is it's going to allow the rule change to occur. It's going to allow people to get up to speed with what the rules are, to learn how their packages and labels need to change. And then they're going to be able to resubmit their packages on August 1st. At that time, we're going to have a new electronic system to have some of the licensees, the OLCC licensees, will be able to log on to the same system that they are using for their license applications and be able to apply for packaging and labeling as well. So we hope that it's going to be a streamlined, simplified process that's going to make it a lot easier for everyone out there. Because we've already received packages and labels from some people, what we're going to do is we're going to credit the account, so they won't have to pay for the packages and labels to apply again in August. We feel like this is the best way to make sure that everyone can comply with the rules. And I want to encourage anyone, if you have any packaging and labeling questions at any time, from now until whenever, you can always contact me. We have an email address that's set up for this. It's marijuana.packaging@oregon.gov. Or you can give me a call. You can contact me at any time. If you want to learn more information about your particular package, you can always have a consultation with me. This is not the pre-approval process. This is just me and you sitting down, having a conversation about your particular package. And I can tell you if it's missing anything, what it's gonna look like, when the time comes for you to apply. And you can talk to me before the rules change, when the rules are changing, about, your packaging. The other thing that I would like to encourage all of you to do is there, during the public hearing times, to go and listen. I know the Oregon Health Authority is doing 3 sessions, public hearings, on the labeling rules. So I encourage you guys, if you're interested, to go and learn how the rules might be changing on the labeling side.
Thank you, Jamie. Amanda, real quick, tell us about the license types, and I know there's some meat to that, but just kind of go over that real quick. License types and the fees for recreational, and can you explain a little bit on how the micro canopy is looking for folks, which is if you're not sure what the micro canopy is, it's the way that we worked with the legislature to allow OLCC to bring in medical marijuana growers into the rec system and to be able to continue to take care of their patients. I worked on this directly for the last year and a half, trying to get it through last session, and we finally got it through the short session last time. This is so important to be able to make money, be in a lucrative marketplace, and also take care of the folks that we've been caring for years, the most sick and disabled among us, right? So, and I was, impressed by the interest at OLCC to do that. We've seen other programs and other places really kind of attack medical patients and attack safe access. And so the micro canopy is going to allow you to come in. You can come in a smaller grower. If you were a small grower and you just want to dibble into the recreational market, you can come in to a 16th of an acre or an 1/8 of an acre and have these small canopies and be able to have extra space in your garden for in your canopy for the amount of patients that you grow for. And so how is that looking, right now? And are we moving forward? We had some issues in the legislature with not being able to sell the excess marijuana produced on this bump up, which was not the intent of what we put together for the micro canopy. You were supposed to be able to sell whatever excess marijuana you grew as, incentive to continue to take care of these sick people. We wanted to make it, viable for people. People have to pay for their bills. They have to pay for their dirt. For years, we were not allowed to make money. We were just supposed to magically create marijuana, and dirt is free and nutrients are free, as you all know. So it was very easy for us for the last, you know, eons of time. So how does this micro canopy look? How are we going to be able to continue to care for our patients in OLCC, and how do you see that moving?
Great, that's a great question. So there are two kind of different answers there. The micro canopy is something that we have in our as an edit to our temporary rule. So Brent was part of the Rules Advisory Committee, and when they met on, I believe it was April 8th or the 7th, they were able to look over some changes that staff's made to the temporary rule. These changes aren't in effect yet, they're still in draft form, but the micro canopy is actually one of those changes. And the way we were able to do that is we have authority to have a tiered system, so we have the tier one and the tier two for the grows. So we were able to add in the micro tiers as well. So you can see the draft language on our website under the Rules Advisory Committee section. And then we'll be having the language posted at a more prominent place on our website when we get ready for the public hearing on the 25th. It's still a draft. Everybody has a $250 application fee. The licensing fees for the micro tiers haven't been set in stone yet, but I believe they're $1,000 and $2,000. $1,000 for a tier one micro and $2,000 for a tier two micro. And I actually did not write down the square footage, so I don't have it in front of me, but it is available on the website. And then the second part of your question is about the medical add-on. And so that language and the drafting around that, I think people can look forward to seeing that probably around the end of June when our temporary rules become permanent, and we come out with that new temporary rule. So all of those 2016 changes, I think we can expect to see with a second temporary rule.
Great, great, which is good news for our patients and medical marijuana growers in Oregon. So let's give them a quick round of applause for paying attention to the need to continue caring for these folks. Scott, I'm going to give you, I know we're getting close on time, and I want to give some question time in the audience. So Scott, can you kind of talk a few minutes? And then I remind you, please engage with these folks out at their booths. They've taken their time to come down and spend the day with us, and they want to answer your questions. So we're not going to get them all handled up here on stage, but we definitely want to give you the opportunity to do that. So please come over and bug them and drive them nuts with questions after this. They love it. Scott, what's going on with tracking, and how's it going to look?
It's looking really good. So I actually recognize faces out here from the training classes that we've had. So far, we've had 13 training classes, done almost 400 people. We've got more in-person training classes coming, and then we're going to be moving to web-based training for everybody and support. We're highly encouraged by the number of people that we've had, and the people I've met have all been fantastic. So really excited to be working here with this group. For those who aren't familiar with the CTS program, basically, just look at it as it's a tracking system like in any other industry. Every industry in the United States, regardless of what type, has some sort of regulatory software that runs their businesses. Most of those industries have to purchase software themselves and implement it themselves, and there's not a lot of support that goes along with it. So the OLCC and the state of Oregon have done that for you on your behalf if you're going to be a licensee. Basically, this system is pretty simplistic in a lot of ways. It does what you do. The CTS is designed to provide a web-based system that allows any licensee to get into the system without having to purchase hardware or download software. It's just a web-based system, and it provides serialization. Plants don't come with serial numbers on them. They're not grown and don't come naturally on the side of the plant, so there has to be a way to track it. I'm sure everybody sees every week or every month in the United States, we have an average of 8 to 12 recalls. And those recalls can sometimes take months to occur. You know, I get my favorite comment from people is, you know, it's just a plant. You guys need to get over it. Relax. It's a plant. Well, you know, last year cucumbers killed 4 people and put 150 people in the hospital, and it's a plant too. So, you know, just look at the regulatory part of this and that the system is designed to be, number one, in compliance with federal guidance from Ogden and Cole memos, and number two, it's there for patient and consumer safety. So the system is out there, it's easily available, we do a lot of training on it. It just follows the normal path of what you do from cultivation to sale to tracking through the retail sale into the labs. So for those of you who have seen it, You know what I'm talking about. You know I can suck up a lot of air explaining things, so I'm going to avoid that. But I'm absolutely happy to take questions at the end of this or inside of the hall across and explain and go into more detail. But just keep basic functionality is it's a web-based system that's used to track through serialized tags that are put on plants and packages. We like to say if somebody was laying dead on the ground outside next to a candy bar, we would be able to figure out where all the candy bars were related and do that in a matter of minutes. So it's all about patient and consumer safety. So,
and there is training available for that. So people don't just have to learn this overnight.
Absolutely. Right. Training is, we pride ourselves on training and support. We have a dedicated team of at least 9 people right now. 3 were hired to supplement our support team just for Oregon. And those people provide service and support on a regular basis, telephone, email, trainings. We're doing in-person trainings so we can actually get to know everybody in the state, all the industry people. We will come out and do site visits if necessary. We have training moving to a web format that will be ongoing forever and ever. Those, we usually run 4 to 5 training classes every week. We have specialized people to support labs, specialized people to support processors. And we, like I said, me personally, I've been over 100 facilities. Never turned down a request to come out to a facility, and I love going to them. Brenton's was the first one that I actually went to that was outside. So didn't run into many outside grows in Alaska, so.
Right. What do you think of those little outdoor plants?
Little tiny things, you know. I walked out there and saw things that looked like redwood trees. So,
we can grow some pot in Oregon, can't we?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Let's give these guys a quick round of applause. We want to thank the OLCC and Scott Denholm from Metrics. One more little jaunt here, and then we're going to take some questions. So I just want to say. How excited I am, and being on the side kind of, you know, obviously from the industry and being in the back scenes and seeing how the legislature works and seeing how these agencies are reacting to us. I can tell you, I talk about the state of our union all the time, and I think at this point I feel really good about it. I know there's a lot of challenges, and we've all come up, you know, against zoning issues, but it's the end of prohibition. And I can only imagine that it wasn't so smooth for the first, 12 to 24 months of trying to regulate alcohol and make it work. So I think we're actually probably speeding it up quite a bit compared to what was done, 100 years ago. So let's give a round of applause for ending prohibition of cannabis in Oregon this year and everybody that helped with that. We have freed the weed, as we've been saying for a long time. So, we're going to continue to work hard in this industry. I know you are. I appreciate everybody for coming out today and, listening to what we have to say. And we're interested in what you have to say. I think it goes both ways. And so keep it up. Keep working hard. Let's get these businesses started. And we're going to show the rest of the country how to get it done. Let's take some questions.
Hi, I'm JT from Oregon Works, and we're a processor and product development group. And the question I have is about dual licensure. Hold the mic. Sorry about that. Dual licensing, which we're really glad that's getting worked out. But we found a caveat as a processor that says the OLCC license, if you get a medical endorsement, you can go ahead and process at a certain level into the medical side. There's a caveat in there that has us sort of questioning. Because from the, and you may not be able to answer this, from the OHA side, it seems like the OLCC endorsement does not include certain types of medical products. So I would have to have both licenses to do certain levels of products. What we think that is that the dosing regimes are different on both sides. So if I have an OLCC license with a medical endorsement, is it that I can only provide the same types of doses that OLCC is going to allow on the recreational side unless I get the medical license and then I can do the higher dosage stuff that's being allowed on the medical side?
So that's a great question. And what you're talking about is one of the 2016 legislative changes. And so like I had said earlier, those changes are going to be written into our current rule. We're going to be adding those with a second temporary rule. What you need to keep in mind is that medical and recreational still are going to be separate. So as a processor, you would be a recreational processor or you would be a medical processor. But you are correct. There is some new language that will allow a recreational processor to make a medical grade product. And but that medical grade product will still stay in the recreational side because it's tracked with the recreational system. And so if you want to talk further about it, we can talk about it at our booth later. But just keep in mind that, and that's a perfect example of the new laws that have happened and kind of the staggering effect and when we're going to be able to have those in our actual rule.
Yes, hello. My name is Ben Mackinnis, and I'm representing myself personally. I am the co-chair of the ACMM for the state of Oregon, but I'm just representing me now. Part of my question is just a very simple one for some of the people I talk to. Question number is just if, let's say tomorrow, hypothetically, I put in an outdoor production, request for an outdoor production license, tier one, when realistically could we get a license and put plants in the ground? And conversely, so same question for if it were, say, a research and development license.
So let me take that one. I have no idea. Let's start there. But let me talk about that. Is we talked earlier about the application process, the number we have, like I said, 275 roughly outdoor grow applications that we're focused on. Probably based on our data, 70% of those applications are still incomplete. So we're getting information in and we're starting a dialogue, but we're not getting complete applications when they come in. So we're really focused on 30%, and now you can see how the system, and that's not cause and fault. This is a new regulatory market. People are learning, but it slowed the process down. I was hopeful that we'd start issuing licenses 30 days ago, 45 days ago. The reality is we're just getting there now. We're focused on we've seen the hit for the outdoor. The number of outdoor applications now have pretty much stopped. So we think we've got in the system what's in the system. We're gonna do all I can tell you is we're gonna do the best we can to focus on that and get those things through the system as fast as we possibly can. And I recognize the fact that if an outdoor grow comes in today, they might not make this cycle. That's just the reality of where we are today.
One, I think, important thing on that is what a lot of us are doing too is if you have a medical grow and you've continued to have a medical grow, when OLCC, if you don't have any license and OLCC comes out and you have a greenhouse full of plants, you're going to have a problem getting licensed. If they come out to a property where you have a medical marijuana card and now with our limitless clones and seeds and seedlings, you essentially can get ready for rec. So that's kind of what I've been directing people to. If you have your medical process, go that way and just be ready to expand. We've just added holes to where we'll get those plants in. Even if it's the middle of June, we may end up doing that. But the big thing is review. When you go to get your application, and I can tell you from experience, you need to really pre-read what you need for that because you have to get some documentation that is stuff you can get, but if you don't have it, it completely holds it up. And that's what they're talking about with not having complete applications. It's just one simple thing that you may not have printed out yet that you have to, you know, upload and send to them. So make sure you know what you need for the application. They're great at like getting that information out. There's spots on the website for that. But that pre-approval stuff on your own makes it way faster, and they're processing it about as fast as I think they can. And so we're excited, just as, honestly, with the amount of work I've seen that they have to do to get this done, for them to be licensing growers in the next couple weeks is a huge step forward, and so they definitely deserve some credit on that. I think we have a question over here.
Good day. Thank you for your feedback. We appreciate it. My name is David Evans, and I've been a dispensary owner, as well as other functions in the industry. My inquiry is whether there's any further clarification with regard to the cannabis handler education course. Is that something that we would create on behalf of, you know, a dispensary and then have them, you know, qualify for the card by getting the 70% passage of that exam, or is there something more specific that you have in mind?
So let me take a shot at this. So we're developing a curriculum as we speak for the handler's card. As you know, the original 3400 that was passed, the requirement for handlers was only for retail. That was expanded in February, kind of threw us for a little loop. Now it's around all license types. We've got to have handlers permits available or testing available for the entire process, which, as you can imagine, went up as far as workload significantly. But our plan right now, as we speak, is to develop an online system that hangs off the application system that you're used to now if you've applied, where you can go online, actually take the test, pass the test, and then we'll do a background investigation. We're required by statute to do a background on everybody that applies for a marijuana handler's card. As soon as you pass that, then we'll ask you to pay for the fee. So we're not gonna ask you to do it up front. You'll pay for your service permit, and then it'll be my idea right now. I think what we're gonna do is approve you, and then you can print it off at home and be ready to go. When you talk about timeline, because we put our system together for the retail to begin with, and we're expecting retail to go be live and up and running by the end of this calendar year, we were hopeful we'd have it up by October 1st. The way the law is written, it requires us to have the handler's permits done by July 1st. I think the date was moved up as well. That's put us kind of in a weird box because we have a process in place going for October 1st. So we're trying to bump all that up and get it up and functional as soon as we possibly can, closer to the July 1st date for everybody as opposed to the October 1st date. And we'll have one curriculum through all license types instead of having to take four different tests, so to speak. You'll take one test because we think that'll help the industry as well because people will move through the cycle. You might work for a producer one day and then want to move to retail the next day, and you'll have one card to support the entire system. Does that answer your question?
Right.
Okay, we have time for one more. And then, Framwell and OLCC also have booths, so you can talk to them after.
Hi, my name is Rebecca. I have a question. I'm a registered nurse and a community health nurse, and I'm a big fan of evidence-based dosing recommendations. And with one researcher being licensed or having submitted an application to do research, does the OLCC play a role in the OHA's proposed dosing restrictions that aren't evidence-based?
So that's a really good question because the dosage is one of the areas where the Oregon Health Authority actually has the rulemaking authority for both the recreational and the medical programs. So what we do at the OLCC is we work really closely with the Oregon Health Authority, the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Revenue, the Water Resources Department. There's a lot of different state agencies that have overlap in this program, and we try to coordinate as much as we can. That being said, ultimately, the Oregon Health Authority has the regulation over the dosage. And so when it comes time to be making decisions based on the dosage, on the labeling, and on the testing, it does sit with them.
Great. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you so very much. Thank you. Yes. Let's hear it again.